Let's bring in the goalie guru from In Goal Magazine, Kevin Woodley. And Woodley, we saw a pretty good clinic put on by the Russian goaltender as they put a pretty hard stop on all things Canada. So what do you see in this Russian goaltender, Yaroslav Askarov, and what his future might look like moving towards pro hockey?
Well, full disclosure off the top, Strutty, I did not get to see much of the Hlinka. Okay. After, I believe we talked last week, I was at the Goats on the Roof in Coombs on my way to the West Coast, and 4 days of surfing kind of coincided with with the good games, or at least the primetime games that we saw young Askarov in, especially the gold medal game. So I didn't see that, but I have a little bit of background on him. And yeah, really, I'll be honest with you, kind of more of the same. We've talked about this over the years with Jason, how, you know, if you're, we've seen sort of trends in terms of where NHL teams look for their goaltending. We saw Finland, obviously, for a while there. We saw Sweden briefly sort of lead the way as sort of a top goalie producing nation. And for the last little while, and it looks like it'll continue with Askarov, I saw Craig Button, who, you know, does as good a job as anyone I've seen on prospects, list him on Twitter today as a guy who maybe even has the potential to be a first overall pick. Russia is the place to look for goaltending for the most part right now, and part of it is because they have less coaching at a young age, a little less structure. They sort of, as young goalies, they sort of are left to their own devices to figure things out, learn how to read the game, learn how to play on instinct a little bit before they add technical structure later on. Now that'll disappear as they evolve as a goaltending nation. They'll probably become more instruction and more kids wanting to follow in the footsteps, ironically, of the kids like Vasilevsky who maybe have less structure and have success because of it. More kids want to play the position. That leads to more goalie coaching, and eventually all the things that NHL teams like about guys like Askarov start to disappear. So it's an interesting cycle to watch, but right now Russia's still in the sweet spot of it. And it looks like this kid checks a lot of the boxes. I mean, the technical foundation is better than we've seen some from other Russians at that age. The athletic ability is clearly there, and he fits right into the perfect window. We've talked about it before. 6'3" is your, you know, 6'3", 6'4" is your ideal goaltender size. And anything to either extreme, whether it's 6'6" or 6'1", you know, size is working against you. It's something you have to overcome. So he checks a lot of boxes. You know, I still kind of doubt, you know, the talk of him maybe being a first overall, you know, in an era where goalies are rarely picked in the first round. It seems unlikely, but certainly I think it, you know, legitimately the conversation already is, you know, is this a kid who's going to surpass Spencer Knight, who was picked so high by the Florida Panthers last year, maybe be picked even higher? Hey, if you see number one potential, like a Vasilevsky type potential in him, why wouldn't you? And it'll be interesting that. And then there's a Swedish kid the year after, in, I think it's Wallstedt, in 2021, that they're talking about as maybe even a top three type of pick. So, nice to see those conversations happening about goaltending. It's not all about, you know, you get them in the later rounds anymore. People recognizing that elite talent maybe deserves to be picked higher. Let's see if it pans out once it's time to actually make those picks next summer and the summer after that.
Talking all things goalies with Kevin Woodley. And Woodley, we're going to try to get through the division here, the Central Division, quite quickly. So let's start with Chicago. Two starters, where are they looking as for depth in between the pipes this year?
Well, if I was ranking the depth charts of goaltending in the Central, Chicago would top the list, no question. And I know there are question marks about Corey Crawford as a starter, but bringing in Robin Lehner alongside him gives you two sort of proven NHL starters. I think Lehner's job's going to be harder in Chicago than it was with the Islanders and Barry Trotz last year, no question. But I also think he's capable of doing the job there. And even if you run into, even if Corey Crawford doesn't stay healthy, even if he struggles with health again this season, they have two guys in the AHL who are ready for more duties. Colin Delia showed that he's already capable of being in the NHL last season, so you've got him ready to come up. And Kevin Lanikin, who probably still has some work to do as an NHL North American pro after his first season over last year, but don't forget, like, just spectacular at times, leading Finland to a gold medal at the World Championship. So, like, they don't just go 1-3. I think you need three goaltenders in today's NHL. They go 1-4. And their 1 and 2 are, as you know, when playing well, are as good as anyone in the league. So Chicago not only might have the best depth in the Central Division, but they're a team that could probably challenge as one of the deeper ones goaltending wise in the entire league.
What about as far as Dallas Stars? We know they got the big guy, but is there enough behind him if something were to happen to him for 2 weeks or a month or two?
Well, I like them for 2 weeks or 2 months even because of Anton Hudobin. That's why I liked the signing at the time. Hudobin's actually probably better. He's a guy that plays, you know, I've kind of joked at times. He reminds me of Tim Thomas a little bit. The way he plays, it looks like an unmade bet at times. You know, there's more structure there than I think people give credit to, but certainly a lot of instinct, a lot of rhythm, a lot of timing, the kind of things that lend themselves to being better when you play more. What Hudobin deserves credit for is he's still pretty good when he's only playing once every 10 days, once every couple of weeks. But where his upside is he can do the backup job good, but he's even better if you need him to play rather than once every 2 weeks, 2 weeks straight. And we've seen him in Boston before that when he, you know, for stretches there took the job from Tuukka Rask. So he's better when he plays more, and that's exactly what you need in Dallas because the chances of Bishop, as we've seen, getting through a season unscathed tend to be slim. So that's a great 1-2 punch in the NHL. Where things fall off a little bit for them is they have a good prospect pool, but none of it's really proven right now to be, you know, surefire, ready to be called up and actually play in the NHL. So lots of potential down there, just a little thin on sort of, hey, if you need somebody, like, that's the thing, like, if one of them goes down, it's not, Hudobin can give you that, but you still need to spell him at times. And when you look at Colton Point, who struggled last year, Jake Oettinger is a high draft pick, 26th overall first-round pick, but not necessarily, like, it's going to be his first year coming in as a pro. I'm not sure that's, you know, there's usually a transition there, frankly. And Landon Beau has at times looked ready, but there are still question marks about his ability to play at the NHL level. So it falls off a little bit there in Dallas, you know, in the number three spot. But because you're so set in number one and two, it's less of a concern than it might be elsewhere.
Talking with Kevin Woodley, the goaltending guru from InGoal Magazine, joins us weekly. Three through four, you have as far as goaltending depth in the Central Division of the NHL, Predators, Blues, Jets. It's funny you say, because are you talking then after number one, or is this combined of all 1, 2, and 3 stars to get these guys all kind of around the same group in their 3, 4, and 5?
Yeah, you know what? I think in terms of the depth chart, that's where they all have different strengths and weaknesses, but I think when you add up the sum totality of their depth chart, because that's important, right? Like, not many teams get through a season only using two goalies. I think there were 9 teams last year that made it through only using 2, and that's actually higher than it's been in the past couple of seasons. You usually need a number 3 to play at least 1 or 2 games, and sometimes a lot more. We've seen it over the years. So, you know, and all these teams have different strengths and different weaknesses. The Predators, obviously, Pekka Rinne established number 1. You need to back off his workload, no problem, because you've got UC Saros in the number 2 spot. If you run into injuries and you need somebody to come up, Troy Grosnick is a guy that a lot of people sort of overlook, but I think he's perfectly situated as a number 3. Good support guy for a young number 4, but can come up and give you spot starts if you need it. I still think Grosser is a guy who, if you needed to play him, he can play. The Predators got a bump this year by Tampa Bay getting rid of Connor Ingram. And frankly, a head-scratcher for me from the Tampa Bay perspective. There's something there that, to this story that, you know, frankly, I don't even know about. I mean, the kid in his first 2 years in the AHL is like 916, 922, and all of a sudden they sent him down to the East Coast Hockey League for a stretch last year. That raised a lot of eyebrows, and then they offload him to Nashville this year. So for whatever the reason, it's the Predators game because they were missing that sort of that prospect with high-end upside, and I think Ingram gives them at least a little bit of that. So set in the NHL, not as established behind that, but I think they'll be fine. The Blues, Bennington, Allen, and then not much else. They've got prospects, and I think what they really need to be three deep is a healthy season from Ville Husso, who, you know, frankly was ranked ahead of Bennington for the past couple of years as a prospect in the Blues system, but ran into injuries last year and really struggled. So if he bounces back with a healthy season, St. Louis goes 1-2-3, no problem. And I think Jake Allen, for as much criticism as he gets as a number one, is still a very good 1B option there. Where things would get murky for the Blues is if Husso struggles again for a second straight season, because there aren't a lot of answers behind him right now. So they really need, you know, a healthy year out of him. If he looks like the guy that was there 2 years ago, then their depth chart 1-3 is as good as any. If not, they have some questions behind their first two. Winnipeg is also set. Hellebuck, Brassois, pretty good 1-2 punch. Although both of them, given the losses on defense of Trouba and Myers this year, are going to be busier. When Hellebuck had his breakthrough season 2 years ago, they were a team that really insulated their goaltenders from cross-ice lateral plays exceptionally well. It's going to be a little tougher to do that, given the losses they have on defense. So I expect Hellebuck and Brassois to be busier. The questions behind them and the reason they fall down the depth chart in the Central Division is Eric Comrie is not signed yet. He's a restricted free agent. You expect him to sign, and if he does, they look pretty good 1-3. Assuming, of course, Eric Comrie gets through waivers, because this is the first year he needs to clear, Jason, and there are other teams. He's struggled when he's gotten called up to the NHL, but he's been good in the AHL, and I know there are some other teams out there that really like his game. So if they either don't sign him or lose him on waivers, then they're down to promising but just a second-year pro in Michael Berdan, who, again, lots of upside, perfectly situated as a 3-4 with Comrie, but without Comrie, again, whether unsigned or claimed, that looks a little thin. So that drops them down the overall depth chart. And then we get to Mini. Mini at 6. To be honest with you, Dubnyk is solid as a number one. I'd like to see them back off his minutes and how much they push him. If you look at his past three seasons, it's been good kind of up until February or the All-Star break. And then it tends to break down in part because I think they overplay him and he breaks down. They locked in Stalock for 3 years. I like Alex Stalock. He's kind of like Khudobin, where I think if you get him on a roll with sort of the way he relies on instinct and reads, he can give you good starts. But I don't know if he's really well suited to the every couple of weeks thing. And behind him, they have no real can't-miss prospects and no proven NHL presence in the minors. So that drops them down the depth chart in the Central Division considerably. It just does really seem to be a lot of eggs in the Devan Dubnyk basket in Minnesota.
And one last one for you, Colorado, a team a lot of people are very bullish on for their forward group, but you, my friend, have them ranked last in the Central Division as far as goaltending depth. Why is that?
You know, and it's funny because I'm actually, their backup right now is Pavel Francouz, and I'm actually a lot higher on him than a lot of people are. I actually think he's kind of reminds me of David Rittich in Calgary. Comes over a little later from the KHL, has a really good first AHL season. I know there were other teams that would have been interested in him. He was only on a one-year deal coming over last season. And if he'd made it to unrestricted free agency, I think other teams would have taken a shot at him. But Colorado re-signs him with the intent of playing him as the backup behind Grubauer. And that's where the question lies to me. I like Philip Grubauer. Obviously, he had a great second half last year. We saw the same thing the year before where this is a guy who took over the starting job from Braden Holtby. Even though he lost it in the playoffs and Holtby ultimately led them to a Stanley Cup, like, that's no small accomplishment. And the second half he had last year was fantastic. The commonality there in both cases is they were second halves. And it is a big difference between, you know, being the guy and playing 50 games and sort of splitting the load. And right now, as high as I am on Francouz, that's a lot of pressure on Grubauer to be the guy. And he's going to have to prove it. There's no Varlamov to split time with here. And you know, I think he's capable. I like his game. for the most part, but for whatever reason, it hasn't translated over a full season to date. And hey, we're well into this career right now, so it's not so much a criticism of him, or it's just as more of a, until you've done it, there are going to be questions about your ability to do it. And playing night in, night out as a number one is something we haven't. We've seen for a couple of months at a time. We haven't been able to see it through a whole season. So there's questions there. Francouz, again, I'm a believer, but this is going to be his first steady job in the NHL, and so questions come with that. And frankly, there isn't really a fallback plan B if they run into problems. Like, there's not a lot in the depth chart. So as much as people might read this as criticism of those two goalies, it's as much about the lack of things behind them, the lack of options behind them, and the lack of experience for both of them in their current roles that drops them down what is, frankly, a pretty deep division in goal.
Great breakdown, Kevin Willie. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
Perfect. Thanks, Treddy.